Hi, 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 McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 121 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of the one and only McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And I am joined by my buddy, my backwards traveler, Andy Nichols. Andy, what is going on, my friend?
Good afternoon, and we're recording on a nice Sunday, and we're getting ready to talk about songs that Paul gave away.
Yes, they gave away, but they were singles. I mean, Paul's given away lots of songs over the years, but we're going to just mainly talk about five songs that were singles, and we're going to talk about whether or not his name had a lot of weight with it during his solo career, as it did with this time with the Beatles.
Beatles, I mean,
because as we know, John and Paul, they gave songs away to other acts during their heyday, and some successful and some not so much. And we're just going to compare the two and see how, you know, see how Paul did, you know, as a songwriter for other acts during his solo career. So we picked five songs here. We're going to go over those and it just, you know, talk about them and see whether or not we like them or should he have kept them, or was it better that he just gave those songs away? You know what I'm saying? You know,
interesting. After we do this, to see how many of the ex-Beatles in the 70s, who gave away the most for other people? You know,
Definitely Paul. I mean,
John John didn't give away too much, only a couple to Ringo, right?
He gave a couple to Ringo, and then I don't think George gave too many away either. I mean,
he gave a couple, try some, buy some.
But then he also did his own version as well, you know, so
right.
So it's just like where he gave Michael Jackson a Girlfriend, but he also did his own version, you know. So, but there's songs like Let's Love, which he gave to Peggy Lee, which is, you know, his version, I think is really cool. Really surprised that Peggy Lee version wasn't a single, because it's really good. And then obviously you got the Roger Daltrey, tune. Was it Getty or, you know,
I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
It's on
his first solo album, right?
Right. Correct. You know, which was originally wrote all night from the Ram Sessions.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and Girlfriend, I mean, lots of songs that McCartney
But these were the ones
away.
That Tom and I chose there, but just the singles that came.
Right. Yeah. These five were singles, and they're ranged from 74 to 84. So we'll just, and these, then this is McCartney's heyday right here. This is like the height of his popularity too, you know, during that, you know, 74 to 84 period. So we're going to talk about that, but first let's just we got one news item, and that's I want to thank Serge, for our friend Serge and he just let me know that there was a new cover of Silly Love Songs that just came out. This was on February 11th, and this is by Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. And it's okay. It's not bad. I mean, it's feels like it could have been, you know, released in 78, 79, back in the, you know, those great disco years. You know, if you're a fan of that kind of music, there's a really cool bass line in there, and the singing is not bad on it, but I don't think it's, you know, anything better than the original. I mean, I think, you know, this, you know, Paul's version is perfect, you know, as is. I don't think it could ever be made better, but this isn't a bad
version. like that Broad Street version that we talked about last week.
No. But he's the blame for that. Right. So you can just type in Silly Love Songs, type in Marilyn McCoo, Billy Davis Jr., and you'll get directed right towards that cover if you want to check it out, which it's okay. I posted it on the Facebook page a couple weeks ago, so you know, it's there for you guys to check out if you want. But again,
yeah, the news is pretty quiet now. Yeah. McCartney 3 is that wave is, I think, crashed. And, you know, it's, you know, we're now into late February and, you know, he's kind of just, you know, he's laying low right now until the Beatles stuff kicks up.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, we'll see. I mean, we'll definitely, I believe we're going to get the Plastic Ono box set probably in April. I think they're going to announce it in March coming up. Obviously, like you know, we've got the Ringo EP coming up in March. So I kind of like this calm before the storm. You know, you're giving the wallet a little bit of a much needed break, you know, yes. Even though we are still buying things, you know, yeah. But
we're not buying these. Yeah.
Right. But you know, these mega box sets, they can be expensive. And then what, I think it was like 159 tracks for this Plastic Ono Band box set.
And Yoko's stuff is on it, right?
Yeah, Yoko's stuff, I believe, is on it, which is understandable because John is playing on those tracks as well, which, you know, I'm fine with.
That's going to cause a lot of controversy amongst
them. Fooey on that. I
don't know. Keep it. Listen, I believe it should be separate. The albums came out as separate. They should be separate.
Even though John played on those tracks.
Yes. Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band, John Lennon Plastic Ono Band. Two different projects.
Fair. Lumping
it all into one box now, I think, is not a fair decision. I think it's...
Well, they were the Plastic Ono Band.
Those albums, should have been a double album then.
Fair enough. Okay.
It should have been a double album.
I see your point there. I take your point. And, you know, that would have been interesting if that was a double album.
That's so, the concept that's being shoved down our throats now. If that was the case, then, and I understand that the covers were the same, with obviously just a little bit of a difference.
Right,
And they all the same people played on John's, played on Yoko's. I get that. But, you know, put it out. They should have just put it out together as one, but that didn't happen. So now, hey, it's still going to be a great set.
Right.
We know it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, true. And it would have just kept in fashion of what they were doing. I know you got, you know, those first three experimental records from John and Yoko. I think that would have been really interesting. I think that's a pretty interesting point that you bring up about, you know, making those two albums a double album rather than, you know, keeping them separate. And it would have been funny to see how that would have been received if that was a double album, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is interesting if you looked at it that way. But who knows, you know, record company pressure at the time, you know, they had done three experimentals and he probably figured, or they were like, it's high time you do a proper record.
Right,
you know?
right.
So maybe they may not have gone for it, but then again, you know, they, you know, again, they kind of threw caution to the wind with Lennon's stuff. They acquiesced to him and her quite a bit.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they let her do, you know.
Two double albums,
you know, and Paul couldn't get Red Rose Speedway to be a double. Yeah, we've talked about this.
Anyways, but when was the last time are you still listening to McCartney 3? When was the last time you listened to
it? A little bit of a break. I probably haven't listened to it probably in close to 2 weeks or so.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. I listened to it last week at work while I was at work.
On your phone
On the iPod. You know, I transferred it over to the iPod. Yeah, I put it all over there. And you know, it still sounds fresh to me only because of the fact that I'm not overdoing it. I'm not getting fatigued on it. I'm not like playing it nonstop like I have with other stuff like I did with Driving Rain, as a matter of fact. I mean, when I first brought Driving Rain, it was just like because I had the, you know, I had a cassette player in my truck at the time, so I was just like,
you had the cassette?
Yes, I had the cassettes.
Do you still have it?
No.
I know. That's a score.
Especially what people are trying to sell it for on eBay. It's ridiculous.
What's the cassette going for?
I've seen some over $60.
For the cassette. Man, somebody has Hunyadi's Driving Rain cassette somewhere. And it's probably sitting in some garage in a pile of crap and nobody even knows what it is.
No one knows what it is. It's in a bread box somewhere. And, you know, somebody's summer home or something.
Damn, so you had that on cassette.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Cassette and CD, yeah. However, you know, I wasn't buying vinyl at the time, and I didn't even realize that it would have came out on vinyl in 2001, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Especially where vinyl was in 2001, which was pretty much dead in the water.
It was, if you lived in the right market, though, you could get
it. Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, and luckily McCartney was still, you know, pressuring the studios to release, you know, his material.
A name with his power. You say, look, you know, give me, run 10,000 of these off worldwide. You know, I know it's the CD.
Right.
Run 10,000. I don't even know how many were pressed, but. Right. You know, that anywhere from that, like, you know, early 90s to, what do you say? When do you say vinyl resurgence really kicked in? After 2010? Oh,
2010. Yeah, probably just a little before that, I would say. But 2010, it really starting with that. I mean, especially with the when people started getting familiar with Record Store Day, you know, a lot of artists were participating in Record Store Day, releasing special stuff. So yeah. I think that was really a big help for records, for vinyl.
Sure. I mean, I just went into my local Barnes and Nobles yesterday.
Right.
And and the vinyl is not just like a little rack, you know, like you go to a Best Buy, there's like only like 10 records. Barnes and Nobles has a ton of,
there's actually a couple rows.
Yeah, rows. Vinyls. Like A to Z. Like not just like 20 records, like hundreds of records, brand new records, at Barnes and Nobles, you know. But, you know, all probably $30 and up. You know,
I mean, they do have some reasonably priced. I know they'll do some half off stuff from time to time. But yeah, I mean, Barnes and Nobles do tend to be a little bit more on the expensive side, I've noticed over the years.
But I mean, again, where if you don't have, like where you are, you have a lot of great mom and pop stores, which is great.
Right.
Where I am, there's not. So if anybody's a vinyl connoisseur, they'll go and they'll buy their vinyl at a B&N.
Right. Especially since, I mean, a lot of people are reissuing their stuff right now. So, I mean, especially if it's a popular title, Barnes & Noble, there's a good chance Barnes & Noble is going to have it, you know.
Yeah, but even over the last, like, I would say 2, 3, 4 years, the amount of vinyl in a Barnes & Noble is it's quadrupled in volume now.
Agreed. I'm really surprised. I mean, because Best Buy is selling vinyl now too.
Yeah, but not too many. It's like Target. It's like, oh, here's 10 records.
There's a couple. Right. It's nowhere near what Barnes and Noble.
No, not at all. And I didn't even see any McCartney 3 there either. So.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that they didn't save some copies for in-store purchase on McCartney 3 for Barnes and Nobles. You know, Target did, luckily. You know, I did see the price of the Barnes and Nobles blue vinyl on eBay come down a bit. The Coke bottle one, though, is still, the Spotify version is still in the hundreds.
Really?
You know, Yeah. Anywhere from like $150 to $300 people are still trying to get for that Coke bottle Spotify vinyl.
eBay or Discogs?
Yeah, eBay. eBay, yeah.
Damn. Yeah.
I am going to purchase my first 45 on Discogs here soon.
I hope so.
Yeah. Try to switch over to the Discogs here real soon. So. But they have a pitcher Band on the Run pitcher disc. I'm sorry, pitcher sleeve 45 that I still need to purchase, and I found a couple.
So, good site, man. It's a good site.
Yeah. So thank you for making me aware of that, Discogs. So, but
you weren't aware before I told you?
Well, I was aware of it. I just was never. I didn't really feel the need to go there. But then, you know, you're talking, you know, the way you've been talking about it, and some others that have been talking about it over the course of the year, you know, I've definitely, you know, checked it out.
You can still buy eBay, but it's just another place to go where it's just solely records. It's eBay,
yeah, exactly.
Everything.
And I have seen that their prices are a little bit more reasonable.
A little
there.
Bit. They are,
you know, which is nice, you know, for a change.
A lot of people might just sell exclusively their online store through Discog. They don't even go to eBay. So,
yeah. So what, I mean, so do you do the whole Discog thing where you scan the barcode and then it's in your catalog and then it kind of gives you an idea of what that out record is worth as well, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Any vinyl, say from like, whenever barcode started going on records, which probably wasn't really to the 80s, you can do that. Any titles before that, you really have to pull the labels out, the Matrix, the Dead Wax, to figure out where it was pressed and what variant. So I started doing it a couple of years ago. Any vinyl and CDs that I have that are barcoded are in, because that's easy. But the stuff that doesn't have barcodes, that takes a little more time.
a little more time and patience.
You got to go. And then there's, I mean, as you go through Discogs, there's like, it's, you're amazing how many, there's like, you know, 300 versions of the same album.
From the
original year the album was released. Say, for instance, take Abbey Road, right? I mean, there's, you got to go through like 500 versions of Abbey Road to maybe find your pressing that you're looking at. And did it come from Jacksonville? Did it come from Scranton? Did it come from, is it, it's, there's so many like cat that you have to really, so it's a hobby. It's time consuming, but it's something that I've picked up a little bit since 2020, obviously.
Right.
But you should definitely, I'll help you out with it if you want to start doing it.
Yeah, maybe come April or something.
Springtime, yeah. Yeah, stay tuned, people.
Yeah, that'll be cool. So, but all right, getting to today's topic, really kind of interesting. I mean, you look at the fact that, you know, you see all these other artists that took stuff from Lennon, McCartney during the Beatles heyday, especially in that 63, 64, 65 era. You know, a lot of songs written by Lennon, McCartney that did well for other artists. You know, you got your, you know, Billy J. Kramer's, your Peter and Gordon's, your Cilla Black. I mean, a lot of these people, you know, were all in the same camp. And then, you know, Lennon, McCartney were like, here, we'll spread the wealth a little bit, you know. So, and those songs did well. However, you know, come the solo years, you know, when they're separate and they're giving away songs, they're not really necessarily did as well. So I was really curious to see, you know, talk about, you know, did their name have as much weight to them as when they were a band, you know, when the Beatles were a group? And it doesn't really, when you look at the chart success, you know, during the solo years, it really doesn't, you know, reflect that, you know. So But songs that they you know gave to other acts that did well, you know, you look at Step Inside Love for Cilla Black. I mean, that was for 67. That was a number eight hit, a top 10 hit. You know, you've got I'll Keep You Satisfied for Billy J. Kramer.
Billy J.
Yeah, that was an UK number four hit. And these are songs that Paul mainly wrote. You know, obviously they're Lennon McCartney songs, but they're mainly
Paul songs.
Right, exactly. Like Dreamers Do, The Applejacks, that was a UK top 20. You know, not all of them were successful though. I mean, you got, you know, Love of the Love, that was 35. You know, it's not all of them were like these mega hits that made, you know, mass stars.
Got to 35. Damn.
Yes, right. It wasn't that top 10, you know. So, but then that, you know, and then obviously we know the success of Goodbye for Mary Hopkins,
sure.
And then, you know, Come and Get It, you know, for Badfinger. Those were
Probably the gold standard track in terms of like songs so that they gave away to other people.
Right.
I would say that probably that has, during that Beatles era, that has to be probably the most commercial song they gave away that was a hit.
That could Come and Get It, you think?
What else would there have been?
Yeah, you know, maybe A World Without Love.
Well, that too, yeah.
That was a number one hit.
World Without Love, you know, obviously is number one, but I got to think Come and Get It. Actually, probably now more people know Come and Get It though than World Without Love, because the staying power of Come and Get It's been it's
true. The funny thing is, yeah, World Without Love was the number one hit in the UK and the US, you know, so that was a pretty big deal.
There is a little bit, have you heard, there is a little demo out there floating out there,
right?
Pretty good. No,
and then there's versions of the Beatles. I mean, the Beatles doing these songs too. You got That Means a Lot out there. You know, you got obviously the Step Inside Love, which is on the anthology,
sure.
You know, and then I think it was on the White Album box set too. The full length version of Step Inside Love with Las
Paranoias.
Yes, thank you. So yeah, I mean, there's versions of that out there as well. So, but let's get into the Paul solo career, because then, you know, come 74, there's three singles that come out in 74 that, they're McCartney penned tunes.
McCartney songs all that same year, which is interesting.
Right. And then plus another song, like I said earlier, Peggy Lee's Let's Love, which not, you know, the album comes out, I think in 74, but that song is not released as a single.
Right.
But let's start off with the track called 4th of July, which was by John Christie from 1974. Now I think I believe it's credited to Paul and Linda McCartney, but you know, obviously, I mean, you got to believe that this was mainly, you know, Paul. You know, there is a demo of Paul doing this track, and that's on the Venus and Mars archive set. Yeah,
which as a fan, I was not even aware of this song until the Venus and Mars set came out.
Really? Oh,
Not know the John Christie's. Did you?
Right. Yes, I did, because you know talked about. Yeah, because I think Ken Michaels had played it on his radio show at some time before. So I did. I was aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I did not know a thing about this till I got Venus and Mars. I'm like, well, what's this track? And you know, but John Christie's version is pretty nice.
It's not bad. It's produced by Dave Clark and Mike
Smith. Yeah.
Fame. So, from my understanding, Dave did reach out to Paul and ask, I got this new upcoming kid. Can you give him a song? 4th of July was that song, and it's not bad. I mean, the finished version of John Christie's 4th of July, I still don't think is anywhere near as good as Paul's demo.
No,
of
4th of July. No.
Just
it's a nicely produced record.
Right. Yeah. True.
It's mid-70s softy.
Yeah, singer-songwriter era type of song. You know what I mean? But Paul's vocal, the way he delivers the vocal on 4th of July, I think is just 10 times
better.
Sorry,
yeah. John. And I didn't even know who John Christie is. So, John, sorry. But it's a good song. I didn't realize this is Paul and Linda credited.
Well, when you go to on YouTube, when you go type in John Christie 4th of July, you'll see the images on the video.
I have it up right now.
Right, and then on the back of the sleeve, it'll say written by Paul and Linda McCartney. Right, which you know you got to say would have been a big help, you know, for that track. However, not being there, I don't know how well they pushed, you know, that song, you know, if radio stations were behind it, you know what I'm saying?
Well, he was signed to Capitol. So, you know, there was some power there. I didn't know the song. I didn't even know John Christie. So is he known for anything else?
He's got a couple other songs that are on YouTube that you can watch, a couple other singles. I'm not aware of what album this would have been on. You know, there's not a lot of information on John Christie out there. So
no. But it's McCartney Music Inc., a good old ATV. This was still tied up in all that too.
Yes, that's true.
So this is one of those songs that falls under that umbrella still.
Yeah. So, but now here's the thing is like, I was also playing around on YouTube last night, doing some other research, and there's a, if you type in the making of the James Paul McCartney special, there's about a 50 minutes of audio of the photo shoot scene from the James Paul McCartney special. So it's just outtakes of that specific scene. And then you do get like a quick 3-minute segment of him singing, "Why Are You Crying?" You know, it's the 4th of July or whatever.
Oh.
So just a real quick little segment, you know, he's going through all these other songs, you know, Mama's Little Girl, Bluebird, you know, Blackbird, Yesterday, you know, so Heart of the Country, you know, so he just does. So he just gives you like a quick, you know, 3-second, you know, version of that. But I really like Paul's version that he gave us on the archive edition. So really good.
I like John Christie's though too. I mean, I didn't know it until I heard it, until we were preparing for the show. I didn't hear it. I like it. Paul's version is way better, of course. Yeah. But I like John Christie's version. It's nicely produced and good job of Dave Clark.
So let me ask you then, would you rather have Paul kept this one for himself to release, or are you fine with him giving this one away?
He should have kept this for himself.
Yeah. I did too, because I think it would have been a nice fit on like maybe a Venus and Mars, you know.
I don't know if this fits on that.
Or maybe even London Town. But,
I could see it fitting on that.
Right.
Or even Speed of Sound.
Speed of Sound, yeah, okay, I can see that as well. You know, because you know he does keep songs in his back pocket for years. You know, at a time before he releases them.
I think Speed of Sound. If any song, if any album needed some extra help, it could have been Speed of Sound.
Speed of Sound.
As you just found out, you just finally got the archive collection right. on vinyl.
Well, on vinyl. On I mean, vinyl. I've had the CD and box set for some time. So
rookie. But anyway, that album Shut is only. I call it like I see it. There's only three sides, but that song could have done very well on Speed of Sound. Low key, mellow production. You know, I think
right.
either that one or London Town. But again, you know, he gave it away. What do you think? You would have.
I would have been happy if he kept this one for himself. Myself.
Of course, yeah.
You know, only because so you see the potential of the song for Paul's demo. You know, especially his vocal delivery on the song.
Something kind of gets lost with it because the song's called 4th of July, but it doesn't really have any kind of patriotic overtones to the whole thing at all. It's kind of right. just, you know. Why am I crying? It's the 4th of July. Right. 4th of July, you think, you know, Stars and Stripes Forever. You know, you don't hear that's this song isn't any of that.
Right. And plus, you know, and then to your point, you know, having it on Speed of Sound 76, you know, that's, you know, 200th anniversary.
Bicentennial.
Right. Bicentennial. Right. Exactly. So may have been a good album to put that on. Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
good point. Yeah.
It was nice revisiting this track. And again, learning something, not even knowing John Christie's version before you right. and I came up with this show. So, yeah, good version.
Yeah, not a bad vocalist.
No.
Not a bad vocalist. Okay, let's move on to the next track. And that is Mine for Me. Rod the Mod from the album Smiler. Yeah, produced by Rod. I believe this was his fifth album. And
one of the cooler covers is with the whole kilt thing going on there.
Oh, you like the cover?
I like the kilt look. I'm not the photo of Rod, right. not great, but I like the kilt.
Right, right. So this would have been like the cod piece right here with Rod. Yeah.
We could lose Rod's photo, but I like the
that. Right.
Yeah, it's a Smiler. Yeah, this is mm-hmm. This is the album that has Sailing on it, right?
No, wait a minute. Let me double check. Sailor, not Sailing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Rod does a cover of The Girl from North Country on this one, which is not bad. He does a cover of Bring It On Home to Me, You Send Me, which is pretty good. Let Me Be Your Car, which is a Elton John, Bernie Taupin song. So, okay album. I think it's the weakest of the first five albums that he released. But it's got Mine for Me, and I should point out that that 4th of July did not chart. So
not chart.
To the point that we're trying to make that, you know, McCartney songs, just because it has the McCartney name on it, it doesn't mean it's going to be a guaranteed hit.
Right.
You know, so then Mine for Me. Okay. So again, written by some say Paul McCartney. There's some info that I've seen that says Paul and Linda McCartney, you know, so you could go either way with it because this is still right around that time where all these songs were written by Paul and Linda McCartney, you
sure.
know? So, but Mine for Me, again, produced by Rod Stewart, pretty cool thing. You know, Rotten Faces were on tour in late, 74. It's called like the Christmas tour. And on November 27th, Paul and Linda came out, on stage and did backing vocals, for Rod on this. And there is a short segment, on YouTube that you can see, with on them doing that. And then that performance ended up airing on NBC's Midnight Special later on in the year as well, I think in 74. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Midnight Special that aired in the 70s.
Yep.
You know, pretty good, you know, really some really good performances throughout the heyday of that show. But I think it's really Rod's vocals that make this track his own. So for me, it's hard hearing Paul sing this after hearing Rod's vocals on this, because I've known about this probably since this track, since the late 80s, I want to say. So this is like one of the songs that Paul gave away that I've known about for the longest.
You've known about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because I've been a big Rod Stewart fan for a long time. Yeah.
So. I like it. This is a song I think I'm okay with him giving this one away. I think you are too.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
Because to hear Paul do it after Rod do it in his way, it just
You can't. It's his vocals. Rod's vocals are so, so embedded in my brain, that to hear, Paul doing a
Mine for
version of this,
me. Yeah,
right?
you can't think of Paul and Lydia. I mean, hey, maybe there's a version of it laying around
And that's
somewhere.
the thing, you would have figured that Paul probably would have sent him a demo of this just for like a run through demo. Here's how it would go. Now you run with
Maybe
it.
they worked on it in the studio. I mean, he's on the session. He's on backing. He's credited as backing vocals. Maybe they just, hey, that might have just, you don't know if guys gave them the demo or they said, oh, we're going to get to the studio. Oh, here's the song and here's how it goes, That could have been this case, I mean, I haven't read too many Rod biographies. Has he spoken about this experience working with Paul?
No, I none that I've seen. I was trying to look it up in the in this Beatles After the Breakup book. I was looking
Yeah,
in,
I looked last night too. I didn't see,
Eight
I
Arms to
thought
Hold You.
nothing, right?
Not much.
Yeah, there's a nice photo from this period though. I think from that concert, you see Paul, it's with Paul, Linda, and Rod. It's a nice photo.
And plus he performed the show. Perform this on Top of the Pops, I believe. So there is a video of actually of you can see him do this song, in several different places on YouTube.
What did this chart?
Okay, this charted at it was a US single and it was the second single for the album and it charted at 91.
So,
So
yeah,
not very good.
no, and I see it's I see here it's buried at the end of side two here on the album.
Right. Well, actually, it's the last song. It closes the album.
Yeah, I see that. Top 100. So it came out in November of 74, October. Yeah, came out in November of 74. Yeah, I mean it's not a song that screams commercial hit. It's not like hearing Jet, It's not, it's an okay song.
You see,
So
this would have been like the second tier ballad, maybe from Paul for me, if he did
if he
end
had
up
done it.
releasing, if he released it himself, only because I don't think he could have delivered. I mean, just it's just it's Rod's song after hearing it. I mean, all you had to do was hear it once from Rod, and it's Rod's song. It ruins any possibility of me liking a McCartney demo or
a
something.
McCartney version. Yeah. Although if a McCartney demo surfaced, I'm sure that we would like it.
Oh, absolutely. We like it, buy it, play
But yeah, it's one of those songs too, because Stewart has such a distinctive voice. If you don't know that McCartney wrote this song, you're thinking it's a Rod Stewart song.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because his voice is so, you just it's so unique that he could do any song. You think, oh, that's just a Rod Stewart song, but sure enough, he's covering and he's done loads of covers, but
Oh, Rod Stewart has made a big career out of cover
his
songs.
second had his second and third career by doing them. Did
Most Great American Songbook.
you get his most recent studio album?
Rod's?
Yeah.
No. I
Okay.
don't think I have an album past the 70s from Rod.
Oh, you don't?
No,
Okay.
I used to have the first box set I ever bought. With my
Storyteller.
own money, it was Storytellers.
That's great.
Love that box set. However, Mine for Me is not on that box set.
No, it's not. But his new album came out, I want to say a year or two ago. Like he had that period where like he was doing the standard stuff
He was doing
because
the standards, and then he did like a song, did an album of all rock covers, the softer rock covers,
Right. So yeah, that was good too. But then, and then he kind of got his career going again. Blood Red Roses, which was a new one, came out in 2018. And apparently, it's really good.
Okay,
Oh, Blood
cool.
Red
I'll have to look
Roses.
into it.
That's it there. Yeah, but it's worth a shot. Checking it
I'll
out.
check it out.
Good old Rod, or his what the hell? What does Elton call her? Call him Phyllis and. They have names for each other. Elton and.
Because they're big friends. I mean, they're huge
Right.
friends,
Oh, Phyllis and something or other. They have these names they
Okay.
call each other. Oh, boy. Yeah. Have you ever seen him?
Rod Stewart?
Yeah.
I sure have. First concert at Tiger State, old Tiger Stadium. Saw him live. It was pretty cool. He was the band started playing Do You Think I'm Sexy, and I'm going, oh my God, this is great. And then he stopped, and then he, it was like there were like 10, a good 15, 20 seconds into the song, and then he goes, no, stop, I don't do that song anymore. I was so bummed. I was really bummed. But good show. Yeah, really good. I think this was 94, I want to say. This
okay.
was. Yeah. You know, kicked a couple soccer balls out into the crowd, yeah, you know. Lost, you know, got lost, forgot where I parked the car afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sure. He's supposed to play this summer, and he's supposed to be coming to Jersey. And
oh, cool.
Having not seen him before, I would really, really
like I would definitely recommend seeing Rod live.
If it happens, you know, who knows still. But he's supposed to tour this summer, and I'll definitely go check him out, you know.
Cool. All right. So, yeah, unfortunately, Mine For Me charted at 91. You know, again, you know, the weight of the McCartney name really didn't help carry the track. So,
no, did not. Yeah. Did not 91, and you know, it's middle of the road.
Right.
It's middle of the road. Nice. It's a nice track. It's about it.
Right. Gotcha. Okay, let's move to again 1974 still, and that's Leave It. And this is on the right here. It's the Magira album right here. This is
Brother Michael.
Yes, which a lot of people call the Lost Wings album. You got Denny, you got Linda, Paul. Obviously, you got the first appearance of Jimmy McCullough working with Paul on this album. You also got another Wings member on this one. Do you know who that would be?
Henry McCulloch?
No, actually, Denny Sywell is on the song Leave It because they did this song before Denny left the band.
Oh, wow.
So this song Leave It was pretty much, yeah, it goes back to 73. So this track was pretty much they presented it to Warner Brothers, and this track helped Warner Brothers to sign McGear to a contract. So yeah. So, and it was also the start of this album, the McGear album as well. I mean, they, you know, people liked this track so much that they said, hey, let's make a proper album out of it. So, you've got, again, 74, produced by McCartney. Let's see. Yeah. Like I said, the song led to McGear being signed to Warner Brothers. Now Warner Brothers had just signed McGear, and they also signed Badfinger that same year. So there's could be some, you know, thing where they're trying to say, oh yeah, we're going to sign Badfinger, we're going to sign McGear. Maybe we can persuade McCartney to sign to Warner Brothers after his contract.
That might've been,
you know,
the motivation.
Right.
Maybe
could be, you know. So, but, you know, again, this track with lead vocals, by his brother, Michael, I've been a big fan of this song. I really enjoy it a lot. It was only released in the UK as the A side. Now it was released on the B side, in America from a song that wasn't even on the album, which was, you know, pretty crazy. But you know, sometimes we don't get things right where the UK does. What are your thoughts on the song? I mean,
Leave It. I like it. I don't love the track. I kind of wish I could have heard Paul. This is one I wish Paul would have kept for himself.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
To me, it has like it sounds a little bit, BTO-ish, you know, not BTO, Boston. Sounds like,
really?
Sounds like Boston.
Wow.
He sounds like the singer of Boston here a little bit to me.
Okay.
Just a little bit. Not the production, just the singing. Just the vocal delivery style to me sounds like it's like a Boston outtake.
Interesting.
It does. I've never been a huge big fan of the McGear album. I know it in passing. I'm not big into it. I know there's a lot of big fans out there of it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it definitely is the Lost Wings album for sure. But I think I would have loved to have heard Paul's version of this. And I think I probably would have liked it better if he had done it.
Interesting. Yeah. Me, I think this is what is a good song for Paul to give away, which, you know, he did, obviously he gave to the brother. To hear a Paul version of this would be definitely be interesting. And maybe he did do a demo, not sure. I don't think it would have those, the crazy horns that, you know, the big horn solo right. That you hear at the beginning of the song. Who knows if that would have been there, but it's a good song nonetheless. I mean, it did go to 36 in the UK, so not bad.
No.
Of all the songs that we're talking about today, this was the hottest. This song charted the highest, whether it was in the US or the UK.
Yeah.
So, but all in all, I like I said, I really enjoy the song, but I'm fine with Paul giving this one to
my
brother. Yeah. So. But you're still up in the air about this album, right? You're not really.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of it. I just can't get into it. And maybe I need to give it a proper re-listen.
Right.
It's been re-released again. Wasn't it a record store day?
Yeah. No. It was re-released in 2 years ago.
Okay.
Actually, no. 2019. This is the box set. Now you could. You could get this, or you can get the vinyl. So I ended up getting both. And you can get it to where he would sign something like a little postcard, McGeer.
So what are the contents of the box of the the box set?
Great box. So you got obviously the remastered album on disc one. Disc two, you have outtakes and oddities. You have a longer version of this song, Leave It, on here. You have B-sides, stuff that wasn't on the album that were A-side singles. In the US, I believe Sweet Baby was the bonus track to, I'm sorry, the B-side to Leave It in the UK. So that's on the first disc.
It looks like a nice set. Who put it out? What label put
this,
it out there?
This is, oh man, good question. I completely forgot the name of this company that put it at ER, yeah, I'll have to look that up and let you know. ESOTERI.
Esoteric.
Esoteric. Yeah.
Esoteric. They do a lot of archival stuff.
Right. And then this was also released, I think, in the early 2000s as well. Reissued in the early 2000s. Right.
It's been that one that's just, I've been aware of it for decades. Right. I just haven't had any reason to dive into it because he's not singing on it.
Right. And it's funny you mentioned that too, because the first time I listened to this album like 10 years ago, I didn't care for it either. But it was like on the second and third listen, because I really loved the second side, the flip side to this album. Love it. I mean, every song, every track. And then, you know, with the help of Leave It on the first side, you know, I started really liking the
more of it. Yeah.
Right. And then you really, you really get to appreciate Jimmy's playing, because he's got some great guitar work on this album. So, I mean, I think there's a lot to like. And then there's also a DVD in there that has two really long interviews with Mike, because the guy, he doesn't stop.
Who, the interviewer or Mike?
Mike.
Oh.
Yeah, Mike is a chatter.
That doesn't have the interview where he tells the guy about the whole Paul's Dead thing and he tells him off.
No, that's not on here. But that is on
YouTube. That's great.
And it does have the promotional film for the song Leave It on here as well.
You've got me convinced. I will give it a proper listen.
Right. Please do. Yeah, please do. Because I think it's a very worthy album. I think Mike is a pretty good vocalist as well. I mean, obviously he's not as talented as Paul, but there's some good stuff on it, Okay. So like I said, that was 36. I think he did the right thing by giving it away. And you thought Paul should have kept this one himself,
yes.
Right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Let's move on.
Are we up to Ringo now?
We are Ringo, 1981, Private Property, which
saxophones galore.
Oh, the horns are massive. I mean, they really just turned up the horns on this one.
It's like taking a page out of George's book here with, like,
right.
You know, like this song, right. Or something.
Right. So, again, produced by McCartney, album from the Stop and Smell the Roses album.
My favorite Ringo album, by the way.
Right. Okay. Really?
Yes.
Stop and Smell the Roses is your favorite. There you go. Right there, my friend. It is a good album. I think Rack My Brain is terrific. However, I think Private Property was the lead off single for this. It should have been Rack My Brain,
in my opinion.
You know, Rack My Brain is the more exciting song, I think, on here.
Thank you, George.
Yes, thank you. Drumming My Madness is a little silly.
That's a little,
yeah, because there really isn't any inspiring drumming.
Is my madness. Right.
Originally called You Can't Fight Lightning, Paul donated two songs and produced another song on here, Sure to Fall. He also gave him the song Attention, you know, which is, you know, probably the weaker of the two.
Yeah, I love that song.
You like Attention?
I love Attention.
Really? Okay, yes. Fair enough.
I want a McCartney demo of that to come out somewhere one day and be like, ah, there it is. I love that song, Attention. Even Ringo vocals of it. So, yeah, but yeah, I think Rack My Brain definitely should have been the lead off, not Private Property.
Right. So now, okay, the song itself, like you said, you mentioned the horns. Obviously, I mean, it just leads off with these massive horns, and it's throughout, you know. Not the biggest fan. Now, I love horns. However, they would have just like brought it down just a
touch. You don't like 80s horns, as I've learned.
No. Love 80s horns. It's just I don't think the solo Beatles utilize them as well. Specifically Paul, I don't think he utilized them as well as he could in the 80s. Now, I love what he did with the set, you know, like Venus and Mars.
Right,
what he did with those, and you know, and then obviously silly love songs and whatnot. But you know, it's okay. It's this song unfortunately did not chart. Exactly. So it didn't do anywhere near as well as Rack My Brain, and which I think was Paul, which was Ringo's last top 40 hit. Was Rack My Brain.
Rack My Brain, yeah.
Right. So his singing is fine on it, and I'm gonna say that I'm kind of glad that he gave Ringo this song. I don't think this is a really strong song to begin with, so I'm perfectly fine giving this to Ringo. I mean, there's a really fun video for this promotional film, if you want, called The Cooler.
Yeah,
that was directed by Kevin Godley of 10cc fame, you know. So but the video I think is more enjoyable than the song itself.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, this is a song that I was very happy. Yeah, this is one he could have given away. Couldn't see Paul doing this one himself.
Right.
You know, it was definitely kind of lower quality for him.
Right.
I don't know if he meant that to be for Ringo, but it's just not a great chart. So yeah. And this album was just ravaged from the start. It was going to come out.
Oh, absolutely.
Can't Fight Lightning. And then the CBS dropped him and ended up coming out on Boardwalk.
Right.
Which was a short-lived label for a while. And then I think basically, which I think is just a subsidiary of RCA, I think.
I got it right here.
The original?
This is the original. This was, Boardwalk.
Boardwalk.
You know, you see.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. It sounds all very, like those saxes. It just sounds all very like Saturday Night Live, you know.
Right.
Hey, you're watching Saturday Night Live.
Now, the funny thing, and I really wanted to talk to Juber about this.
Oh, man.
But his name, I don't know if you can see it.
They
spelled it Tuber.
Lawrence Tuber?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Both times.
Yeah.
I think he's on it. Yeah. Lawrence Tuber on guitars for Attention. And then let me see for about Sure to Fall. Yeah. So three times.
And of course, you know, we have the first of many recovers of Back Off Boogie.
Yes.
Oh, we got Howie Casey's on this one. So.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good, great lineup.
That's why I like musicians. You got the George, right. You got everybody kind of they were working on it. See, that's kind of why we're gonna have it. John was gonna help out for this album too.
Exactly. Right.
And then they all kind of got together with him after John died. And so to me, it's like the Ringo album from 73, part two.
Right.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't ranked as high.
I love You've Got a Nice Way. One of my favorite tracks on the song. You got Stephen Stills producing. We're helping out. You got Harry, his good buddy Harry, you know, on this album, producing and co-writing, you know. So again, like you said, this is like Ringo and Goodnight Vienna, where you know he's got all of his friends here, you know, helping him out. And it works on this one. Not every track works on here, so I would say probably, you know, of the 10, you know, original cuts on here, I would say probably 7 of them are good to great.
Yeah,
you know, in a way,
I'll,
you know,
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, so.
You know, it was come out of, you know, his late 70s Ringo, a very tough period for him personally, you know.
Well, definitely early 80s as well. I mean, there's you know, interviews from him on TV shows that you can watch on YouTube where he's totally annihilated, and you can tell, you know, which is a shame.
You can't even get old wave, I think, in certain
countries. No. I think it was only Germany and Canada where you could buy it originally. Yeah.
And that's a good record, too.
I think so. Yeah.
So,
but you were fine with Paul giving.
I was okay with giving this one away. Yeah. I couldn't see him redoing this one and turning it into his, a classic McCartney album.
Yeah.
I couldn't see that.
Especially during the tug of war era.
It just didn't jive with what he was doing.
Right.
At that time. You know, it was too poppy, I guess. You know, although again, but so ballroom dancing is too, but it just. it doesn't have that to me. It sounds like a Ringo song for a reason.
Right. No, I hear you. All right. Let's move on to the last track that we're going to talk about today. And this is a really cool song, in my opinion. This is On the Wings of a Nightingale. This is the Everly Brothers, 1984. Again, this is like, you know, 74, 84. This is like the peak, you know, McCartney years, don't you think? And in terms of success. Yeah. Yes. So produced by a friend, Dave Edmonds, and we all know Paul returned the favor by, you know, having to come on the Broad Street.
Yeah. Yeah, so, maybe we'll reach out to Dave and find out if he wants to talk about that.
Yeah. But from the album EB84, this is the last Everly Brothers song to chart. Yeah. And at US number 50. So, you know, not bad. I mean, good for an act from the 50s, right? You know, 50s and 60s during their main heyday, you know, so
it's just full of so much of that 80s production though.
Yeah, a little bit, but this is a gem of a song to me. I mean, you know, there is a demo of McCartney doing it. You can't really tell exactly pinpoint, but I think it's from the 70s myself.
I have it in my sources as like from around the early 80s.
Okay. From when he did that demo.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And that would be great if that was that.
If it's true, I don't know, but it's
exactly.
This is tough because the Everly's version is so good, but if the version of Paul doing it, and it's on YouTube, the quality is not great. It's
not
really
great, but give it a little bit more attention. I think his vocals would have just soared because they do soar in certain areas of the song. But if you give him like a couple more takes with it and let his vocals really shine,
I can feel something happening.
Yeah, exactly. That point in time of the song, you know. I would have preferred Paul keep this one, you know, for the Everly Brothers. I mean, it's great the Everly Brothers made their little comeback there in the, you know, in 84, but they were never going to be heard of again.
This is like, you know, this is their equivalent of the Righteous Brothers doing Rock and Roll Heaven again.
Yeah, they had their little revival and then they're gone again, you know?
Right.
You know, and it's unfortunate, but I think Paul could have had a lot more success with this song, because again, I think it's a well-written song, and it's, you know, you've got your 230
perfect
length of a
length.
Song.
It's got all, right. it's got a verse, it's got a chorus, it's got a verse and a chorus.
Right.
Perfect song structure, perfect melody, great singing on it. I mean, can you imagine if this song was on Press to Play?
Oh, forget about it.
In a really polished way.
Right. Yeah. With Eric Stewart's backing vocals on there. I mean, those two could have blended their vocals perfectly to this,
you know,
this
song. I think from my records, it looks like the demo was from around 83.
Okay, cool. All right.
But I don't know if that's accurate or not, but from my sources, it says the demo is from 83. So,
okay.
I mean,
when you listen to it, he does sound younger. I mean, it does kind of the quality of the demo sounds kind of 70-ish.
It does. It does. Right. Maybe one of our people in the comments can tell us when it actually was recorded. Cause it's not, you know, to your knowledge, it's not in Mattinger or anything, is it?
Oh, they do talk about it in the I mean, it's,
but there's
it,
no
there's talk
no,
about.
Is there a
right,
date?
There's no like he wrote the song specifics or anything
like
that. Oh,
but even
there's,
just a date, right. A rough date when he recorded the demo. No, okay, yeah, but I remember hearing that on a bootleg eons ago, thinking, well, this isn't.
Yeah,
really
let me double
the quality,
check. On
yeah,
that.
I remember hearing the quality isn't great, but damn, this is a nice song. In fact, when I first heard it, I thought it was him doing a cover. Of a cover. I thought it was him doing a cover of like an Everly Brothers song, a take.
Right.
I didn't know that he was actually just doing it in the style, you know, of the Everlys. I did. And then I'm like, no, actually he wrote this song. It's like, wow.
There is the additional home recordings dating. Okay. There you go. Dating August of 83.
That's what I thought.
Reportedly included an unheard composition. I Remember Days, Freckles, Make It to Victoria, Underwaterland, and Bum Raps and Badger Traps. So it was right around that time when he's got a whole bunch of demos there with songs that probably have never been released and never will be released.
In the same vein as It's Not On.
Yeah. Right.
All right, so we both going to say this is one he should have kept. So if we're going to recap, and you're keeping score at home, we covered five songs today that he gave away during the 70s and early 80s. How many do we keep? How many do we give away? So we're going back to the beginning.
Yeah. So I'm keeping 4th of July for Paul.
Right.
I'm giving mine to me. Mine for me to Rod. I'm giving Leave It to Mike. I'm giving Private Property to Ringo, and I'm keeping On the Wings of the Nightingale. So I'm keeping two and giving away three.
Okay. I run them off again. What was the first one?
Okay. So the first one we
Fourth
have.
Of July,
Fourth
we
of July.
All keep. I keep, said Paul right. Keep. Yep. Mine right. For me. Rod can keep it.
Right.
Leave it.
I think you said keep. You wanted.
I wanted Paul to do Leave It. Yeah. And
right.
Then,
Private Property.
Private Property, Keep It, Richie. Yeah. And
right.
Obviously, you know, Wings of a Nightingale, he definitely should have kept. So
yeah. So I think you're three for two. Yeah. So I think you're keeping three and
giving
two away.
You're two, three, right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, chime in with in the comments, you know, what are your thoughts? Did the name alone, did it help carry these songs? I mean, obviously the results did not show that, you know, his name alone could help, you know, carry these tracks to greater chart success. You know what I'm saying?
No, but again, then as Tom mentioned at the top of the show, you know, you talk about all those early Beatles tracks from that 60, you know, 2 to 65, well, really 60, the whole period, really, they gave away. Some of those hits were, some of those songs were major, major hits. World Without Love, Come and Get It. So because they were written during the heyday of the Beatles, did they have a lot more power and juice to get those, propel those songs or to the top of the chart? Or were they just better songs? Like, you know, obviously A World Without Love is classic. I mean, that's a classic song. Or was it because of the, you know, it was in the 70s and the songs were just not that great.
Yeah. The quality of these five songs. I mean, not all of them, you know, I think On the Wings of the Nightingale might be the best, might be the best of the bunch here.
I would agree. I think I would agree with that. Yeah.
You know, so did that deserve a little bit more attention? You know, probably. But here's the thing too. I mean, do these bands, do they want it known that it's a McCartney track? You know what I'm saying? That they're, do they want it to, you know,
Well,
they want that attention. They want that attention. You
obviously,
know what I'm saying?
Badfinger did.
Oh, they'd have no problem with it, I'm sure.
Well, until they were going to retweak the song, and he said, "No,
No,
idiot,
no,
do
no,
it
no.
like this. Do it like this, and you'll have a hit."
Right. But what I'm trying to say, I mean, when you're an artist and you're doing a song, you kind of want to make it your own. And you really don't want, I don't know if you really want other people to realize that somebody else wrote it. You know what I'm saying? Because you want the attention of that song. You want people to know, hey, look, I'm singing the song. This is my song. But yeah, someone else wrote it, but
You
it's
can't have it both ways.
me. No, and I don't think so. I don't think you can, you know, so you
No.
have to have. You know, you have to promote it. You know, here's my new song, but it was written by McCartney.
Right, or like most people do, like listen to Lennon doing Cooking in the Kitchen, right? He has a piano
Right.
demo. Here you go, Ringo.
Right.
This is how I did it. You know, you
Right.
can't get and run with it. I'm sure he was like, okay, I'll copy it. Or a lot of times Ringo just did the same thing that the whatever the
Right.
demo was for him anyway. But most artists probably say, okay, here's how I think it goes.
Right.
You
Well,
know.
we know how that happened with George. You know, George ended up suing him. Ringo, anyways, for not really doing a song the way you wanted them to,
So it's interesting to think about in terms of, especially after the Beatles, to your point about the, you know, just because they wrote the song, does it will carry them all the way? And clearly with these five that we just picked, and again, these were just singles. We're not talking about other stuff, but these were songs that were obviously earmarked by the record company, by the artist to say, okay, here's the single, we're going to try to push it. You know, I mean, Mine for Me, 91, dud. You know, so 30, what Leave It got to 36.
36, yeah, on the
You
Wings of
know,
Nightingale got to
Nightingale.
50, right.
So, you know, it's an interesting observation. You know, and it was a nice opportunity to kind of go through these songs, and you know, some of them I hadn't heard ever. You know, obviously some of them I did. So it was nice to kind of go back through these. Again, it's not like 50 songs. There's only a handful that are out there.
Right, that are singles. You know, obviously, Girlfriend was a single as well,
For
but
Michael.
for Michael, but Paul released his own version as well. So that's why I didn't really, include that one. Plus that was the last single for Off the Ground, and it was a UK single only, and I don't think it did very well.
You mean
Anyways,
Off the Wall?
Off the Wall. Sorry, thank you. Off the Wall.
See, I've rubbed off on you. See?
Well, every time, people see the backdrop, they know. I mean, Off the Ground is always talked about because it's people know they see the album on the wall and they know I'm not the biggest fan of that album, so it's just,
No, you purposely keep it off camera so we don't see it.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right.
You don't want to see those feet dangling in the air. Oh,
No. As a matter of fact, it's funny you mentioned that because when it comes to that thumbnail for ranking the tracks, I kind of told Ethan, okay, try to find images of us making like, ooh,
with the feet
with the feet
dangling?
dangling up, making us like a PU faces or something
Oh, that'll be easy for
like
you.
that.
That'll be a
So,
funny one.
no, it will be absolutely. Well, great. All right, cool. So we're gonna wrap this one up. Andy, anything else you want to add before we
No,
sign
no,
off?
no. Thanks for coming up with always new and engaging topics for discussion here on Two Legs. You know, so it's you know, aside from just doing our normal, which going through our shows here, and Tom is always busy behind the work. You know, behind there, like you know, reaching out to people and trying to put the calendar together for the you know next few months, and I'm kind of the techie guy behind the operation, but you know we make a good team, and he always
Think
kind of
so. Yeah.
he keeps us you know we have our calendars here, and he's like he'll call me up and say, oh you know all right March has 5 Saturdays, April has 4 Saturdays, here's who we're gonna line up, and I'm like okay got it, and then we just go with it. So no, it's been a blast. So, you know, thank you for all the hard work you do for the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, brother. I can't do the show without you. You know, everything you do, including the website, twolegspodcast.com. Check that out. You'll see a lot of our Twitter feed and all the videos that are on YouTube. You'll get the feed there as well. So you can click on that and it'll take you right to our channel, our YouTube channel. Speaking of our YouTube channel, if you haven't subscribed, please check it out. Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We're getting close to 500. We'd like to try to get to 500 pretty soon. And then obviously we're going to probably do a big 1,000 subscriber contest once we get closer to the 1,000. And we got this. We're already trying to collect things and things here and there for
things that
giveaway.
We have. Yeah, things that we
yeah.
have. Copies of Tom. You
yeah,
got how,
exactly.
How many copies are coming up? Do you have?
I've got two copies, and so one of them is going to go in there.
Right.
But, yeah.
We're going to come up with a little McCartney kind of grab bag giveaway.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. So we're going to do that. So be on the lookout for that. But first, let's get to 500. So we're really on our way there. So after this, the Wednesday after this, we're going to be ranking Flowers in the Dirt.
Yeah, baby.
There you go. That's a 2-disc set right there, right?
Yeah. Japanese.
Very cool. Japanese. Very good. Very good. Press to Play. Sorry.
We just did Press to Play. Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun. I mean, I really appreciate you guys tagging along, making this journey with us. A lot of people reaching out saying, oh, I just listened to it again. Maybe my opinion changed on a couple songs I didn't like before. That's what this is really all about. Going back, you know, listening to these tracks, are they really as bad as you thought they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago? You know, go back, listen to these albums. Yeah, it might hold up, your opinions might hold up, but you know, there might be something you might hear
We got a lot of comments about yeah. that, about the last two that we did, you know, prior.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Broad Street and Press to Play, Pipes of Peace. People are like, wow, yeah. I hadn't listened to that record in 20 years.
And exactly. Right. Yeah. And everybody's picks are wonderful. No one's right. No one's wrong. You know, so whatever your ranking is, then if it's good for you, then that's all that matters. And we love seeing that stuff. So keep those comments coming. We really appreciate it. And so yeah, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast on our YouTube channel. So please check that out. We're also everywhere, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, you name it. Andy's got it. Got us on it. So thank you there, my friend. And what else? Instagram, Facebook, Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. Check us out there. Please like. I'm probably going to make the Facebook page probably public so where people can post stuff on there as well. We got a couple requests for that. So that way it doesn't go all to our messenger. People can post stuff, you know what I'm saying, on our Facebook page. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, well, yeah. They can anyway, right?
Well, it doesn't, but they don't see it on the wall. It doesn't come up on the wall.
It doesn't.
Only things that the admins post will go on the wall. So this way, you know, if any of our friends, you know, Ed, Don, I mean, Serge, if they want to post something on our wall, they can.
What do we have to do to do that?
I just gotta click a button. I gotta find out. I don't know.
Oh, well, we can look at
right.
that off the air.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then just make things a little bit more fun. Things can post stuff on the wall, and we can interact more that way as well. So,
awesome.
So that might be it. You know, coming to an end here. February is closely ending. We got March. We got a bunch
our
of
last, this is our last show for this is our yeah. last show for February. Our last Saturday
yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah. We got a bunch of fun people coming up. We're going to be doing part two of our look at the Lennon McCartney relationship during the 70s. So Anthony Rotunno will be coming in. We got a good friend of the show. A lot of people you may know on Facebook, Tom Brennan. We're going to be doing a bootleg show. We're just going to be discussing the, you know, the more well-known bootlegs of.
And we're not endorsing them.
We're not endorsing. How many do you have, by the way? No, I was kidding.
Zero.
Yeah. Right. So. So that's coming up. We've got other people. We got Ken Michaels coming back. We're going to be doing part two. We with Ken a few months ago, we did our first look of the last 20 years of Paul helping other acts, whether they're it's on a soundtrack or whether or not he's performing on a compilation or if he's performing instruments on another person's album. So things like that. We're going to be doing the 80s and 90s for this episode. So there'll be part two of that as well. So be on the lookout for that soon. Probably a compilations show as well. So we got a bunch of ideas, you know, floating around, and they're going to be coming soon. So thank you all for joining us. You know where to find us now. And as always, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
You've been listening to Two Legs, Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.